everybody. It's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Devil in the Family, the new documentary that is out on Hulu right now, focusing on the Franke family, specifically Kevin Franke. It has reignited public debate over the Ruby Franke child abuse case, but this time the spotlight is on someone who wasn't behind bars, believe it or not, Kevin Franke. Was he a clueless husband caught in the gravitational pull of a manipulative therapist and a wife gone rogue? Or was he a passive enabler who let the unthinkable happen under his nose? Or was it kind of a gray area? Today, we're joined by retired FBI Special Agent Robin Dreeke, an expert in behavioral analysis and deception, to help us break down Kevin's statements, his body language, and the psychological elements at play here. Robin, I know you had a chance to watch Devil in the Family, the Ruby Franke story. When you look at Kevin's interview, because this is really the first one that we've seen that really gets in-depth with the family and their specific perception, his explanations on how he was kept in the dark, manipulated, and ultimately exiled from his own family, what jumps out at you? Do you see genuine remorse and deception, or do you see someone who's still rationalizing his own inaction?
Yeah, boy. Movie night at the Dreeks is always a fun time. So yeah, I watched it. So I got lots of data points here, Tony. I'm going to really try to sequence it and break it down for everyone to understand what I saw from my perception. Mm-hmm. So watching documentary, it was very congruous with the things I'd seen already and also what I'd read. Sherry Franke's book was really spot on. The documentary kind of filled a few gaps on Kevin's side that weren't there before, but they were very congruent with the things they were both saying, which was useful.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start out with three words that are really resonating with me throughout this entire thing. Ruby, Ruby, Ruby. Mm-hmm. This entire thing is about Ruby and her, and as her as a central figure, and the spoke of the hub that kind of broke out. And then we're going to talk about these individuals that played a role in this.
Okay.
And you were right. So Kevin is both a dupe. He was manipulated and he was passive. There's a lot of things going on there, but his words in here really helped fill some data points. So let's first, I got to caveat things. We're going to talk about some elements and some doctrine inside of Church of Latter-day Saints, Mormons, that I got to caveat. I am not a theologian, an expert in this at all. I did a lot of my research here because I heard one key phrase during the interview that gave me an eye-opening clue that helped me understand their behavior, as well as things like Lori Day Belvallo, who also used LDS as a justification for behavior.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to talk about that, but I got to say that's not my area of expertise. Sure. And also, I'm not a licensed clinician because I'm going to have my big time conjecture hat on a lot of this, because with all the data points we have, both from her book, from this documentary, from the case, I mean, I'm going to put it all together for you.
All right. Let's hear it first.
Let's go with the basic premise that all human beings, as I said before, are very predictable. That is, we all will act in terms of our own best interests, security, and prosperity for ourselves and those we care about. The key is to figure out what that person, the other person, thinks that is from their perspective. So that's the first thing. And now, based on that, we're going to act in those best interests in terms of our background, our how we were brought up, our belief systems, and also our traumas that we went through, because we have a lot of trauma triggers and responses throughout life, which give us insecurity responses. And so this is with this understanding overarch, it's going to give an understanding of different behaviors in here that we got some data points on. So first, let's talk about the statement that was eye-opening to me that I locked onto right away. My wife is literally sitting next to me on the couch, and I heard this statement, I immediately wrote it down. And this is, they were talking about, and I think it was, I can't remember if it was Ruby or Kevin. It's about unclean souls, unclean people. And so I did a search on the statement, and it was, and this is from the Book of Mormon, which is extrapolated from the Bible, and it's from 3 Nephi 7:19.
Okay.
And no unclean thing can enter into his kingdom, therefore nothing entereth into his rest, save it be those who have been washed their garments in my blood because of their faith and the repentance of all their sins and their faithfulness unto the end. What the statement was no unclean things can go to heaven. And now it all fell into place. Because what did Lori Day Belvallo say about her children? They were zombies. They were unclean. They need to be cleansed. And what Ruby was doing with the two younger children, she kept saying at the very end through all the abuse that her and Jody were doing was that they were unclean. They had demons. So in their belief system, they had to purge them of the uncleanliness to make them holy enough to make it into heaven. That's the rationalization. That's the arc throughout. So then I took a little bit of deeper dive here on some of the things that were really struck me with Kevin. So here you have Ruby and Kevin going to college. Kevin, they don't really go into his backstory and his origin story too much. All we knew from Kevin was he saw and met Ruby and he was fixated. He was on a tear to make Ruby his. Ruby, on the other hand, which we got to see in the documentary, was Ruby had a chart.
Yes.
She had a massive wall chart with all these potential guys, and she had a scoring system for all of them. And Kevin was on it. He was one of many.
Yeah.
And so now we ask ourselves, that's interesting.
What's the reason for this?
Well, here's who does that. Someone who, through the data points we're getting through her statements, and this is mostly from her statements as well as from Sherry's book, talking about her mother. Ruby was always in competition with her sisters. Her sisters had YouTube channels before Ruby did, so she's always in competition. And also, Ruby always was, and because this is part of the LDS doctrine, is the highest thing you can achieve, and Ruby said this, is being a mother. The title and position of mother. And it's not, it's interesting how it's just a title and position of mother and what that means. And throughout, Ruby's mother would always tell her, you can never talk to me as a peer and be my friend until you actually achieve motherhood like me. And so she objectified everyone and everything to achieve her end for that insecurity of making this connection with her mother. So her children were levers to make this connection with her mother. Kevin was a lever to become a mother. And that's why she was systematic in what she did. It's why she's a successful YouTube vlogger. usually is successful. They made it to the point where they're making over $100,000 a month on YouTube alone.
Yeah.
Huge hits, huge following.
Yeah.
And so that's Ruby's arc right there. Kevin was nothing but a screwdriver to serve her ends. He was a tool because you could tell she charted it out. Okay. Yeah. So that's it. Her children were the same thing. Inside the LDS, again, I'm extrapolating here. In order to be clean, one of the areas, now we're going to get into Jody Hildebrandt a little bit. The areas, one of the areas to be clean or unclean in is morals. And right here, moral cleanliness. The LDS faith places a strong emphasis on sexual purity and moral cleanliness. This includes chastity before marriage, fidelity within marriage, and avoidance of pornography and sexual immorality. That last statement right there, I kept asking myself, why during both Sherry's book and this documentary do I keep hearing all this stuff about pornography?
Yeah.
Why does Jody keep bringing this up with Chad? So what Jody was doing was, so Jody herself, and that's, you know, Ruby's cohort, she, and I can't find much on her ex-husband. She has two estranged adult daughters, and she's got an ex-husband. Again, look at the relationships around and the health of them to see the health of the individual. She grew up in the LDS faith as well. She knows the doctrine really well. One of Jody's coworkers that she was a clinician with said that she was very skilled. She was really good until she wasn't, until she got the license because of sharing information that she wasn't allowed to share.
Yeah.
So what Jody started doing was she knew the levers of influence or manipulation, levers of manipulation, using the doctrine of LDS, this uncleanliness and sexual morality and impurity. So that's what she, and she knew how to love bomb like cult leaders do, given validation because she's a clinician. She knew the triggers that everyone had. She knew where to give them validation, what would motivate them, and the shame to show them in their sexual immorality as a lever of manipulation if they fell out of line with her. And so that's kind of a backdrop. So now let's get back to Kevin.
Yeah.
What Kevin was doing was he was all in on Team Ruby. Ruby was doing all she could to be this mother, to compete with her sisters. Inside LDS itself, they were very much promoting vlogging because it promoted and showcased to the world healthy Mormon lifestyles. And so it was encouraged by the church. Their entire mindset, this goes into Kevin's world, as you were saying at the beginning, was it part of who he was? Their entire belief system was all surrounded from the LDS Mormon church. All these things are extremely congruent. And that's, so he was all in on Team Ruby because they, the Mormon church prioritizes, if I got the sequence right, family, God, church. Inside the family structure, they try, they say it's pretty much in balance, but they place the marriage above the children because when you actually have a good, healthy marriage, the children will turn out well. And so that's the rationale that was going on there. Team Ruby, she's all in. Jody enters the picture. Jody's been wronged by an ex-husband. It, she stated, and other people have stated, that she was sexually abused when she was younger. So she's using that background of hers and that trauma response and her skills as a therapist, skills as a therapist to suck people in, lever of manipulation if you fall out of line. And so she fell in love with Ruby because Ruby had this ability to have massive followings. They're both looking at the world like screwdrivers because neither of them had empathy. Very, very little empathy, because how can you treat another human being, especially your children, like this, justifying your actions, saying they're unclean? So that's the whole background of that. Now, I'm watching Kevin's reactions throughout this during the interview when his siblings came up. I did not see a whole lot of remorse.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of embarrassment because of what happened, like after the fact. But he, at the very end, I still got the entire, even though he's filed for a divorce now, I don't know if he's rescinded or not. I'm still trying to look that up.
Yeah.
But he was still Team Ruby.
Yeah.
Everything was Team Ruby. And so, and here's the final thing that tells you this. So when Ruby calls him after 1 year of zero contact, because Ruby told him, in order to save our marriage, remember, he's all in on the marriage, not the kids, the marriage to her. In order to save the marriage, you need to leave. I invite you to leave our marriage. I invite you to leave our house. and she used that as and no contact, zero contact with the kids. She said no contact with me, the kids, or anyone else. Here he is working on the same campus that his daughter Sherry was going to, zero contact. She reached out to him once. He then blocked her.
Yeah.
So when Ruby out of the blue calls him 1 year later and says, "I need, this is your chance of redemption, Kevin." It's like, "Oh, Ruby might let me back into her life. What do you need me to do?" "I need you to go pick up the kids at the police station." No questions asked.
Uh-huh.
He just jumps. She sets the bar and he's all in. When he got there and they start revealing facts, data, and truth to him, you saw his mind was being twisted, because he was so entrenched in the groupthink that had been created around him. Started with his religion background, solid as that was, but then it got manipulated through those levers of manipulation that would both Jody and Ruby were using to control him for their ends. Oh, I hope that made sense. And there's a lot more data points in there, but I wanted to kind of explain what I saw through the arc of everyone else.
Yeah, I mean, it does. I think there was a very good in-depth analysis of what we saw there. And I've been taking notes as you've been talking, because there's a lot of points there I want to dig into a little bit more. The area where they're talking about, you know, basically purging the uncleanliness out of the kids. That to me is an interesting area, because in other religions, I guess, you know, you do that through education. You do that through, okay, this is right, this is wrong, this is what we believe, this is how we act. Other people do this, but that's not what we believe. And it's very, it's like it's upbringing a child without abuse. It's just here's our moral compass, but it's based on religion, not just being a decent human being. With that, it led to abuse, the purge of the uncleanness of the children. Why does it go there? Why does it go to abuse and not just a more calm, rational way of parenting? How on earth are they thinking they're going to get the devil and the demons out of these children by duct taping them, by not feeding them, by making them go stand in the sun and just torturous type things? That to me was just insane. You'd have to believe that your children are not your children anymore if you're going to do that, to put them through such pain and to have zero empathy there. That's a hard one for a lot of people to wrap their minds around.
You just said it right there, to believe your children aren't your children anymore. Yeah. She actually said, Ruby said, these are devils.
Yeah.
And so this was a slow boiling frog. And this is all Jody that was the impetus for this. And she saw a mentally weak victim in Ruby that she could manipulate, because she saw that Ruby had elements of a lack of empathy in her, because, you know, she charted her marriage. She chose through a chart who she's going to marry.
Yeah.
All right. So here's what Jody did. Jody slowly boiled this. And so there's one point when Jody moved into the Ruby Frankie household. Even though Jody's house was, I've never seen a mansion like this. This was the coolest house I've ever seen in my life. She lived there alone in the middle, 4 hours away from the Frankies. Beautiful home and everything. But she moved in because she was being assaulted by evil demons. They have her on video possessed. It's like you're watching The Exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
And she was speaking like, I mean, it was, I can't
I
even
know. It was like, I'm the devil, so I have her.
Yes, right. And so, it was a slow groom into, oh my God, because Kevin said, I believed it all. Chad, the oldest son, he believed it all. Mm-hmm. Ruby believes it all. And so they purged her through love, connections, and all these things, right? And so now that they're all bought into this evil demons can possess us, well, when the children aren't obeying you, when they're disobeying, which is part of the doctrine, when children are being disobedient, well, that means they're unclean. Mm-hmm. And so it was a slow trickle of, well, we need to punish them for being unclean. Oh, that didn't work. They're still being disobedient. And so they kept raising a bar of what this. So Jody was raising a bar of what disobedience was. And so they had to raise the methods to clean them.
Yeah.
And every time they're cleaning them, they're still disobedient. And so that's because Jody said they're possessed.
And not
they're
kids.
Not your children.
Yeah.
And so because what struck me with this one, Tony, was that Ruby called them zombies.
Yes.
Who else called their kids zombies?
Lori
Day Belvallo. Yep. Another nutter. So this is how it happened. And so it's that escalation, that slow boiling frog, because she love bombed them at the beginning, circled it because she knows, the religion so well. Good, wholesome lifestyles that they have. But she then used it as a lever of manipulation because of her own trauma, her own craziness in her own life. And she escalated it for her own means. That's how.
Yeah. I mean, and those levels of manipulation and the levers of manipulation specifically that Jody seemed to know how to pull. And this is something that I struggle with over on Lori Vallow-Daybell of is she sitting there going, okay, this is the game plan I need to have today. I need to manipulate people this way and that way to get what I want. Do you think it was that kind of a conscious thinking that Jody was executing and Ruby was executing? Or had this just become such second nature that this is just their operating system? They're not literally thinking how to manipulate people. They just know, if I do this, this is the result I get or don't get, because they just kept doing the same things over and over with abuse of their children and they were still zombies. How conscious do you think they were in this? And also Jody's possession, that seemed to be a very interesting manipulation play if she's conscious of it, because she was able to demonstrate to them that, look, people can be possessed. And then that opened the door to, well, if Jody can become possessed, I suppose the kids can be possessed too, or they can have demons in them. And it also felt like Jody used that as a tool to get into their lives of, oh gosh, poor Jody over there, she's possessed. Only we can help her, and she needs us to help her. And that's how she feels like. I feel like she kind of wedged her way into the life of literally, I have to sleep in the same bedroom as Ruby, because Ruby felt, well, if I don't do this, she really needs me. So I'm just going to go up there. I'm going to comfort her. It seems just total manipulation. But do you think at the end of the day, all of those things were conscious choices of Jody? Or is this just, is she believing her own stuff like Lori Vallow, it seems?
So everything, as Gavin De Becker talks about in his books, it's all a choice. She made choices. And so there's no rationalizing a choice. But now let's go look at the arc that causes that choice. Yeah, she was very well practiced. She had a lot of life reps in this. Matter of fact, what really struck me too throughout this was that she still had her men's groups every Thursday.
Yeah, something like that.
Still had a group of men buying into her crap.
Yeah.
And paying her for it. Mm-hmm. And so what she was doing was, so what you're witnessing here in Jody Hildebrandt is someone making a lot of horrendous choices because she's medicating her pain. Mm-hmm. So let's put this another way. A lot of reasons why people take drugs and drink and overdrink and overuse and get into really unhealthy bad habits and addictions is because they're medicating pain.
Yeah.
No one wakes up, says, I'm in a lot of pain, I'm going to drink to medicate my... It's a slow trickle. Mm-hmm. And so what Jody was doing is, I don't know her background. This is, armchair therapist kind of crap, I know. But the behaviors that she's doing is she's medicating her pain by manipulation and control. And one of the ways that she's medicating her pain is money. She was making a lot of money by doing this. And she's using her talents. She had, from what I understand, she is very talented at being a therapist. And she's using that as a skill set, not... as part of who she is best way to put it. She didn't sit down and scheme out how I'm going to take advantage and beat people and everything. It's just because that became how she was medicating her own pain. Mm-hmm. And it kept escalating. Because as soon as you reach that one pain threshold and you medicate it, well, then it escalates. It's how, just one drink for an alcoholic just isn't enough, even though like 5 years ago it would have been enough. It's an escalation because it just will never, ever be enough until the fall. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the fall was her total abuse of these children. And so that's how it happened.
It's so fascinating to try and wrap your mind around their belief system. But once you kind of get there, it becomes clearer, because their definition of love, of care, of children, just like being children is not what other people would have as the definition. Like it's a completely different meaning to these words. What we have here with Kevin is another interesting thing. Just that completely devoted. I mean, I would almost call it like extreme lust. I don't know that this is love that he has for Ruby. It seems almost like indoctrinated to feel like he has to be there. And if he's not getting that recognition that he is there, that is her, that is his person, his woman, his wife, it's just completely debilitating to him. Do you think Kevin is in or was in love with Ruby, or is this, I mean, was he just under a spell like a cult leader is under the spell of a leader?
No, it's interesting. You know, I think a lot of people define love as differently. If you ask Kevin, he's madly in love with Ruby. Mm-hmm. I see it as he's completely addicted to Ruby.
Yeah, I think addiction is a good word for this. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because when you hear from the person you're addicted to that your children are in jail, he didn't go rush to mm-hmm. save the children for the children. He rushed to get the children because he wanted Ruby.
Yeah.
It was extremely clear. You know, so that became... And when I saw these minor data points, I started really filling in. Like you said, it helps you understand the crazy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know at what point, and that's why it's really, I don't know enough about Kevin's arc, his spark all those years ago that allowed him to arrive where he is today. I'm really, really curious about how he grew up and what his background is that made him so susceptible to being addicted to Ruby.
Yeah, I really do wonder what that is that made the draw happen there. Otherwise, other than just, well, she's attractive. And, you know, at the time they're both young and, you know, in the same religion, and somehow it all just worked together. Do you think this is a group of folks who all of them are lacking empathy, from Ruby to Kevin to Jody? And it created a perfect storm where there wasn't a adult in the room that was able to stop and go, let's see here. This is not a good idea. There's no loving critics in the room at all. It's all perfect. People that are set out basically on their own journey of, you know, self preservation and self aggrandizement, where Kevin's willing to do whatever, abandon his own kids for Ruby. Ruby's willing to do whatever she needs to feel like she's getting the salvation that she needs, or some sort of affirmation that she's being a good mother, even though she's not. And Jody's out there in her own world, like, I want to pull people in. I want to make money and whatever the hell else she's got going on.
Yeah, everything you said is spot on. And what we're seeing there, too, was, you know, all of Ruby's neighbors and all the people in their circle and Jody's circle, you know, when they initially make their initial contact with you, it's very congruent with belief systems, with family, with LDS and all these things. But what becomes clear over a short period of time that people are seeing, which was repellent, is that there was a really huge imbalance. Mm-hmm. The focus was never on the children. The focus is always on Ruby and what Ruby wanted. The neighbors are saying Ruby was always videoing our houses and our neighborhood without even asking permission or without even telling us. Everything kept centering around Ruby. So a healthy relationship is one that's balanced with both sides giving and taking roughly equally. And there's going to be sometimes imbalances. That's where arguments might come up or resentments and things. But generally, a great, healthy relationship has a good, healthy balance with Jody, with Ruby. And Kevin's an inch. I'm going to put Kevin aside for a second. But those two are the ones without the massive empathy because they were so self-centered. All the relationships are balanced on them. Screw everyone else. It's all serving their own pain and they're medicating themselves by manipulating and controlling the world around them. Not consciously, but by choice. Mm-hmm. And now we got Kevin. Kevin, I think, was empathetic, but only towards Ruby.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, you could see the pain on his face because his children were mistreated. And he does have remorse, but remorse towards, I think he's confused about his remorse. He's like, every time you hear him talking about it, when asked a question about that, he can't quite put it together. He can't quite figure out why he feels bad, because he knows he should feel bad about what happened to the children, but he's more lamenting the loss of Ruby.
Yeah.
I see what I mean. And now here's the difference. Ruby does not lament the loss of Kevin. Mm-hmm. In my mind, I don't think so, because he's just one of the guys on the chart. Mm-hmm. You know, she laments the loss of her of her ability to medicate herself through all this control, through all this power, through all this money. Mm-hmm. You know, so Kevin is a little bit different machine than I think than those two.
Were you surprised after a year? I mean, literally, he spent a year not speaking to Ruby, not speaking to any of his six children, and was seemed to be okay with it. I mean, granted, he jumped at the opportunity of, oh my gosh, she's giving me an opportunity to get back in here, go pick him up at the police station. And then he gets to the police station. He can't quite grasp everything that's being told to him. And he's still on Ruby's side for quite a while into this. It wasn't like he walked out of that police station going, oh my God, I've been duped. He still thought everything that was going on with Ruby and Jody was completely legit, even after it's being shown it's not. Your children are emaciated, and he's still thinking, well, this, you know, there's a reason, there's an explanation for such horrible behavior. I was kind of surprised by that, because sometimes when you're able to get away from the atmosphere, get away from the cult, you kind of open up more. You have more realizations, and you go, wait a second, this doesn't seem right. He didn't seem to do any of that.
No, he was living in his entire life. I mean, think about it. So he grew up with in a mindset of LDS, which is the church in their faith and their practices of what they do. Again, that's the healthy side of his life. And then you had the slow trickle. So he's got life reps of a way of thinking about clean, unclean, family, community, all these things. Ruby enters and still fits that. And so he's now addicted to her, but it's still that same groupthink. And so he's living in this is where between Ruby and Jody, the brainwashing takes effect. They take that same construct of the way life should be for everyone living inside the religion, and they start shifting and manipulating it. So again, can you imagine all, because you know I read so much history. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine, you know, about 500 years ago or a little bit more, where the first natives from different areas around the world first see, again, the most advanced thing they have is a canoe. And the next thing you have is you have these big three-masted ships sailing in, the mind screw that is like, they must be gods, because it blows their mind. They can't even figure out what it is. They called those ships, the first time they saw sailing ships, cloud riders. Mm-hmm. They had no other way to explain it. And so what happened to Kevin when he's first time confronted in the police station, remember, he denied, even they offered to show him the pictures of the kids. He said, I won't see it.
Yeah.
Cause he thought they were lying to him, because I'm trying to remember how long they've been married. I don't know the exact time period, but his oldest kids were grown.
Yeah. I believe it was close to 20 years. I don't have the exact number.
So think about that. So you grew up in a construct, and then for 20 years you were with one woman that you're addicted to, and then for the last probably, I think, 10 years, 8 years, I don't know exact time frame, where Jody came in, you know, you have that complete, you know, structure where you're isolated. This is what Jody does: isolates you from any other input, zero loving critics to mm-hmm. balance the equation of crazy brain here. And so the first time you're confronted with something that is so out of your belief system, out of what you've seen and believed in the stories and lies we tell ourselves, because that's what we do as human beings. Robert Greene talks about it in Laws of Human Nature. We deny and shove away anything that invalidates our own self-opinion of who we are and our belief system. Yeah. And so when he went into that police station for the first time, they were confronting him with, I don't know how old he was, I think he's coming up on 50.
I don't know exactly.
Late 40s, you know, of a lifetime of an understanding of the world, and then for 20 years with his wife of an understanding of what her behaviors are as a perfect mom, all of a sudden you're confronted with she's abusing her kids.
Yeah. And the fact that he wouldn't look at the pictures, that's an interesting point to me of, look, we have the evidence. I don't believe it's real. It's right here. Well, I won't look at it. Well, then how can you say it's not real? It's right here. You're refusing to look at it. Is that like just the kryptonite? Like you open that up, like, here, look at it. Like, is he going to melt if it's shown to him?
His brain shut down.
Yeah.
Literally, when you're watching that, and kind of like when they brought in Ruby to be interviewed as well, and she went silent.
Yeah.
What you're witnessing is brain freeze. Literally the brain locked. When it's like a computer on overload, right? Like
it's got the blue screen of death.
Yeah. You ask it to do something that it's not really ready to do.
Yeah.
And it just locks. The brain locked up. It was so smashing against a belief system and understanding the way the world is, of the stories we tell ourselves for our own survival. Remember, we're always going to act in our own best interest in terms of our safety, security, and prosperity for our own point of view. Mm-hmm. And what he was all of a sudden confronted with was that for the last 20 years, you've been telling yourself a lie about what that was.
Yeah. And when you get so deep in that, that's your whole compass. It's like saying your compass is not even a compass. Like that's actually a hamburger that you have in your hand. That's not a compass. What do you mean? I've been like basing my life on this. Yeah, it's got to be insanely traumatic. And unless I guess you go through something like that, it'd be very, very hard to grasp what that would be like. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on where do you think Kevin Franke is going to be 5 years down the road? This all happened really within the last 2 years. And anyone who's getting out of a cult, who's testified to what it was like, it takes years to kind of break away from that manipulation and to train their mind to think differently and work differently. I don't know where we're going to see Kevin in 5 years, because he seems to still have quite a love for Ruby. I know he said, I love her, but I wouldn't like bring her back into our home and all that right now, but you can tell it's still there. I this is just my opinion, but I still think he'd trade the kids for Ruby in a heartbeat if she said, I want to come back and be with you. I don't know. Or I feel very susceptible to another individual like a Ruby, because he's got to be missing that piece of his life, that manipulative piece of his life where the rest of us can go, that's insanely unhealthy for you. I guess kind of like an alcoholic. And like he knows it's unhealthy and bad, but he can't get enough of it. I think Ruby is like that for him. Where do you think this is going to be? Where do you think he's going to go in 5 years?
I don't know. That's a great question. Again, pure conjecture, but when you look at his behavior and the way he's interviewed and the way he responds, I definitely get the sense that he is saying the things he's doing and doing things he's doing because he's told this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
Not because he wants to do it. You know, when someone's coming out of addiction, the only way that addiction can be overcome is when it no longer requires discipline. Mm-hmm. In other words, the shift in mindset goes from, I can't do this, and that's where Kevin's at right now. I can't have contact with her. I can't do these things. That requires discipline, and discipline will always fail you. Mm-hmm. What doesn't fail is when you say, I don't want to. Mm-hmm. And so not until he moves to a point where he says, I don't want to have contact with her. I don't want to be the person I was. I want to be this. I want to be a father. I want to be a loving partner. I want to have a balanced relationship. Until he can move into the world from I can't to I want, I don't think there's going to be much change.
Yeah, I mean, that's true of any addiction. They have to want the change. And I don't know. I don't know where he's at on it. Should he get the kids back? Because right now they are still in the system. He's fighting to try and get custody of the children. Obviously, the younger ones, I know the son and the daughter that were interviewed in the documentary, they're adults now, and they're on their own. But the minor children, obviously, they're not going to be with Ruby anytime soon. Do you think he's a dad that should have the kids back? Do you think he's in a good enough place mentally to handle that? Or is it, you know, not perfect, but for the good of the kids, just to be with a familial person like dad?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, again, not being a mental health professional, sure, it's a hard one for me to answer. You know what I'd love to see? So Sherry throughout this has been one that is all, and Chad to a degree as well. I don't know as much about Chad because he hasn't written a book, you know, but Sherry is consistently sought out and had some good, healthy, loving critics in her life. Like her history teacher saved her, hands down. The history teacher and his wife saved Sherry.
Yeah.
And probably helped save the family. I would love to see, because again, I worry about the kids being in the system because you and I have seen so many bad systems, like you'd want them to be in a better place than the system. Yeah. I don't know if Kevin's a better place than a system.
Yeah.
Sherry might be a better place than a system. because she knows what she needs. She's in therapy. She gets counseling. She's extremely self-aware about the trauma she went through.
Yeah.
And these, especially the two littlest kids, they need a lot of therapy and counseling. Again, pure conjecture, but sure. If you look at data from past cases like this, you know, these people survived abuse.
Yeah.
They need to be helped through that. And I don't know if living with the person that condoned the abuse by his inaction is the person to be with.
Yeah. Well, and especially it's going to take, you know, looking out from yourself. And it seems Kevin needs to do a lot of looking in right now to get him in a better place, because I don't think he's there yet. And that's just my conjecture. But I feel like, you know, once he's in a better place, if he ever gets there, then maybe a relationship can be rebuilt. But I don't know that. I mean, those kids need attention onto them. And I, from what we saw in that doc, I don't know that Kevin is capable of giving them the attention and helping them go in the direction they need to heal when he needs to heal as well. You can't go out and be good for others if you're not good yourself. As much as I think it'd be lovely if he were in that place, I just don't know that he is. And I wish him the best. I mean, the guy, you know, he made horrible choices. And I think he's realized that to a certain extent. And I hope he's able to come out of this a much better human being. But we're talking about the lives of people here. And just because you want something doesn't mean you should get it. And I don't know that that is a great idea at this moment. Again, I'm not a therapist. I have no idea. But it's all things you think about when they put themselves out there in the public. Yeah. And
I know I got a couple of really, really good friends. That's why I'm always trying to caveat that I'm not a licensed clinician or professional, because I have friends that are. And I would hope that one of the good people in my life that I know that helped me with my behavioral team and everything else, I know what they would say in these situations, that is they need to get professional help. And those are people that need to make the decisions with them. Without that, it's going to continue to down the crazy path. But these people need professional help. There is no doubt.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.